Picture a runway at Mojave, out in the high desert of California, early morning, the air still cold. And rolling toward you is an airplane so wide it looks like two airplanes that got stuck together and decided to make the best of it. Two fuselages, six engines pulled straight off a Boeing 747, 28 wheels, and a wingspan longer than a football field, longer than the wings of any airplane ever built. That's The Rock, and the story of how it got here and what it's doing now is one of the strangest and most interesting engineering stories in the whole space crossover world. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct, the show where we take the complicated machinery of modern flight and figure out what's actually going on inside it. Today, we're going to break down the biggest airplane in the sky and the tiny, blisteringly fast vehicles it drops. Let's break this down. Before we go further, this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI. The whole journey, beautifully made and built to last. If you've got a milestone worth marking, or somebody in your life who does, take a look. AviationSoul.com. Okay, let's start with the wingspan, because the numbers are genuinely hard to believe. The Rock has a wingspan of 385 feet. Say that out loud. 385 feet for comparison. A Boeing 747, the jumbo jet, the airplane most people think of when they think enormous, has a wingspan of about 211 feet. The Rock is nearly twice as wide. The Airbus A380, the double-decker, comes in around 260 feet. Still not close. The old Hughes flying boat, the wooden giant we sometimes call the spruce goose, held the wingspan record for decades at about 320 feet, and it flew exactly once. The Rock beats even that, and it flies for real. So this is, by wingspan, the largest airplane that has ever taken to the air. And I want to be precise about that, because you'll hear people argue about which airplane is the biggest. By length, other airplanes are longer. By weight, the Antonov freighters could carry more. But by the number that matters for this machine, the span of the wing, the Rock stands alone. Now here's the question any pilot immediately asks. Why on earth would you build something like that? What problem does a 385-foot wingspan actually solve? And the answer is, it was never really meant to be an airplane. It was meant to be a runway, a flying runway. Let's rewind. Stratolaunch was founded back in 2011 by Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft, who was also the money behind Spaceship One, the little rocket plane that won the Ansari X Prize in 2004. Allen loved this idea, the idea of launching things to space from the air instead of from the ground, and the engineering logic behind that idea is genuinely sound. Here's what most people miss about rockets. When you launch a rocket straight up off a pad at sea level, you are fighting two enemies. You're fighting gravity, and you're fighting the thick atmosphere down low. The air near the ground is dense, and pushing a rocket through it is expensive. You burn a huge amount of fuel just clawing your way up through the first 30 or 40,000 feet. So somebody looked at that and said, "What if we skip that part? What if an airplane carries the rocket up to 35,000 feet first, above most of the ugly weather, above a big chunk of the atmosphere, already moving forward at a few hundred miles an hour. Then you drop the rocket, light it, and it starts its real job from a much better position. That's air launch to orbit. And we've actually talked on this show about Pegasus, the small winged rocket that gets dropped from a carrier airplane and has been doing exactly this since the 1990s. So the concept works, it's proven. Stratolaunch wanted to do it at a much bigger scale. The Rock was designed to carry rockets up under that enormous center wing between the two fuselages and drop them at altitude. The twin fuselage design isn't a gimmick, it's structural. You've got this gigantic payload hanging in the middle, and two fuselages on either side spread out the load and give you somewhere to put the landing gear, and originally, a cockpit. Only one fuselage is actually flown from, by the way. The right-hand one has the cockpit, the left one is unmanned. The crew that first flew it said the sight picture is bizarre, because you're sitting way out on the right side of an airplane whose centerline is far off to your left. The Rock first flew in April of 2019, out of Mojave. And here's the sad part of the timeline. Paul Allen had passed away just a few months earlier, in October of 2018. He never saw his giant fly, and after that first flight, the whole project nearly died. The plan Allen built the airplane around, launching large rockets to orbit, ran into the same wall that has killed a lot of air launch dreams. The economics are brutal. We actually got into this in our Pegasus segment, so I'll keep it short. When you air launch, the size of your rocket is limited by what the airplane can carry. That caps how much you can lift to orbit. Meanwhile, on the ground, reusable rockets like the Falcon 9 got dramatically cheaper per pound. The ground launch guys kept winning on cost. The air launch advantage, that boost you get from starting at altitude, turned out to be real but small. Not enough to justify the enormous overhead of maintaining the biggest airplane in the world. The data told a hard story. And the original Stratolaunch company effectively wound down. For a while, it really looked like the rock would become a very expensive museum piece. Then something interesting happened. In 2019, the company was bought by a private equity firm, and it came back with a completely different mission. And this is the part I find genuinely clever from an engineering standpoint. They stopped trying to reach orbit, and they pointed the whole machine at a different problem, hypersonics. Let me explain why that pivot makes so much sense. Hypersonic flight means flying faster than Mach 5, 5 times the speed of sound. That's a domain the United States military and NASA care about enormously right now, both for weapons and for the science of high-speed flight. But there's a problem. Testing hypersonic vehicles is incredibly hard and incredibly expensive. Traditionally, you've had two options. You can build a hypersonic wind tunnel on the ground, which can only run for a few seconds at a time and can't perfectly mimic real flight. Or you can strap your test vehicle to a rocket and launch it, which is expensive, single use, and you often lose the vehicle and all its instruments into the ocean at the end. What the world was missing was a way to fly hypersonic test vehicles over and over, cheaply, and get them back in one piece with all their data. And here's where that giant airplane suddenly makes sense again. Stratolaunch already had a machine designed to carry heavy things to altitude and drop them, so they built a rocket-powered testbed called Talon A. It's a small, uncrewed, autonomous vehicle, roughly the size of a modest missile with little wings. The rock carries it up, drops it, the Talon A's own rocket engine lights, and pushes it past Mach 5. It flies its test profile. And then, and this is the key part, it's designed to come back down and land on a runway. Reusable, fly it again next week. That's the whole game. A reusable hypersonic testbed you can turn around quickly. Nobody really had that? Now let's talk about where this actually stands, because I promised you honesty and not hype, and this is a field absolutely drowning in hype right now. In 2023, Stratolaunch did a captive carry test, meaning the rock flew with a Talon A vehicle attached but didn't drop it. Then they did a separation test with a non-powered version, basically checking that the vehicle falls away cleanly and doesn't come back up and hit the airplane, which is a very real and very bad failure mode when you drop something from between two fuselages. Then in 2024, they flew the first powered Talon A vehicles. And in 2024 and into 2025, the company reported that Talon A reached hypersonic speeds above Mach 5 and crucially landed and was recovered and reused. That reuse milestone is the one that actually matters. Anybody can go fast once. Going fast, coming home, and doing it again is the hard engineering. So this is not vaporware. There is a real airplane, a real test vehicle, and real hypersonic flights that have happened. I want to be clear about that, because in the hypersonics world, there's a lot of animated video and not a lot of hardware. Stratolaunch has hardware, but let me give you the honest caveats, because there always are some. First, the customer base here is almost entirely the government. This is defense and research work, flying under Pentagon and NASA programs. That's a stable customer, but it's a narrow one. This isn't a business that's going to be carrying passengers or freight. Its entire reason to exist is that the military wants to test hypersonic technology faster and cheaper than blowing up a rocket every time. Second, they are, as far as the public knows, operating a single copy of the most unusual airplane on the planet. One rock. If something happens to that airplane, if it has a serious maintenance problem or worse, the whole enterprise stops. There's no second one sitting in the hangar. That's a real operational fragility. And it's the kind of thing that keeps program managers up at night. To their credit, Stratolaunch has talked about eventually using other carrier aircraft too, more conventional jets, so they're not forever chained to the one giant. But right now, the rock is the centerpiece. Third, and this is the honest strategic question, hypersonics as a whole is a field where the physics is genuinely hard. Going Mach 5 and up means dealing with heat that can melt ordinary metals, air chemistry that changes as the molecules literally come apart around your vehicle, and control problems where a tiny error at that speed becomes catastrophic in a fraction of a second. A good test bed helps you learn faster. It does not make those problems go away. So the ROC and Talon A are best understood as a tool that accelerates the learning, not a finished capability. Now, Here's the part I want the pilots listening to appreciate, because it connects back to things you already know in your bones. Everything that makes air launch attractive for a rocket is something you already understand from your own flying. You know that your airplane climbs better and cruises more efficiently up high where the air is thinner. You know that a headwind on takeoff helps you and dense air on a hot day hurts you. Density altitude is the same physics that makes a mountain airport dangerous on a summer afternoon and the same physics that makes launching a rocket from 35,000 feet more efficient than launching from the ground. It's all one continuous story, from your Cessna on a hot day all the way up to a hypersonic vehicle at the edge of space. The atmosphere doesn't care whether you're a student pilot or a rocket. It charges everybody the same tax for flying through thick air, and the twin fuselage layout, as weird as it looks, is honest engineering answering an honest question. Where do you put an enormous heavy payload so it's carried efficiently and can drop cleanly? You put it on the center line, and you build the airplane around that center. Function drove the form. That airplane looks like nothing else because nothing else was trying to do exactly what it does. There's a broader lesson here too, and it's one of my favorites in all of aerospace. The ROC was built for one mission, air launch to orbit, and that mission failed on economics. The airplane could have been a footnote, a rich man's folly parked in the desert. Instead, somebody looked at the actual capability the machine had, carry heavy, go high, drop clean, and matched it to a completely different problem that happened to need exactly that. The airplane didn't change, the mission did. And that's a reminder that in engineering, the value of a machine isn't fixed at the moment you design it. Sometimes the market you built for disappears and a better one shows up in its place, if you're willing to see it. So, where does this go from here? The realistic future is that the ROC becomes a workhorse for American hypersonic testing over the next several years. Flying Talonet vehicles for the military and for research programs, building up a flight cadence that ground test facilities simply cannot match. That's a genuinely useful role, and it's a much more grounded ambition than the original dream of routine air launch to orbit. Whether it grows beyond that into a fleet, into more carrier aircraft, into new versions of the test vehicle, depends on whether the hypersonics money keeps flowing. Right now, it is flowing. That could change with a budget cycle. It usually does. But for the moment, the biggest airplane ever to fly is not a museum piece and not a stunt. It's a flying test range for the fastest air-breathing and rocket-powered machines the country is trying to build. That's a strange and wonderful second act for a machine that was almost abandoned. My thanks to Stratolaunch for the public flight data, and to the reporting from Aviation Week and the trade press that has followed the Talonet program through its test campaign. You can find everything we do over at RadioHangar.com. Next time somebody tells you they saw two airplanes flying in impossibly tight formation out over the Mojave, tell them to look again. That's just one airplane doing something nobody else can. I'm Vector. Keep looking at how things work. See you next time.